Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We finally made it to the end of the work week, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives to wrap things up this week, and all of it is brought to you by Simply Safe Home Security. Get $100 off the installation of your brand new Simply Safe Home Security system. SimplySafe.com/ricochet. More on them a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, good news for the Republicans. The Republicans now have 35 of the governorships across the United States. That's a lot, especially when you consider there's only 50 of them. Last night, we got the latest one into the club, Jim Justice, formerly the Democratic governor of West Virginia. It was leaked out prior to the Trump rally in West Virginia on Thursday that Justice would be making this announcement. And here's what it sounded like on Thursday night.
Today, I will tell you, with lots of prayers and lots of thinking, today, I'll tell you, as West Virginians, I can't help you anymore being a Democrat governor. So tomorrow, I will be changing my registration to Republican.
So, of course, Jim, you have a lot of folks, particularly in the D.C. bubble, saying, why would he do this? Trump is in such dire straits right now. His approval's below 40. He's got a special counsel starting a grand jury, which foreshadows a future martini this morning. This is like hopping on the Titanic after it's hit the iceberg. All politics is local, and in case you missed the enthusiasm last night or the election results in West Virginia in November, making this switch in West Virginia, not exactly the dumbest move on earth.
You know, Greg, I remember when Bush won West Virginia in the year 2000, certain political observers noticed, oh, that's really surprising. It's a pretty darn Democratic state that Clinton had carried pretty heavily. Democrats had the natural advantage there, and it was not considered Republican territory. What happened? Well, the cultural wars kind of changed. The Democrats became more and more associated with abortion, with opposition to the Second Amendment and gun rights. I don't know if you want to call it snooty, you know, liberal, progressive, urban elitism. But, you know, bit by bit, the Democratic Party stopped being the kind of party that would be the natural home for a coal worker who may come from a big family and who enjoys hunting and has all of these other identifiers of sort of cultural pride that don't fit in this. So this whole idea that somehow Jim Justice, which, by the way, let me point out, you're talking about a good name for politics, Jim Justice, right? I mean, it sounds like it should be a CBS crime drama. Look out, criminals. Here comes Jim Justice. And but no point do I say that to myself before I go to sleep. He was a former Republican. He switched parties. You could probably say that, you know, Jim Justice had a little bit of political opportunism before in his party switch. But, you know, any Democrat who wins, and it's worth noting there are right now only two Democrats who have won statewide in West Virginia, the state treasurer, and of course, Senator Joe Manchin. Look, they are by and large pro-life, or at the very least not outspoken advocates for abortion. They are indisputably down the line pro-Second Amendment and pro-gun rights. If there's an anti-coal lawmaker in the state of West Virginia, they're not likely to get elected statewide. Maybe you can find one or two in the state legislature here and there. And so in generally, they're always going to be at odds with the, you know, the image of the Democratic Party that is portrayed by Nancy Pelosi. So the idea that Jim Justice is somehow risking his political future by switching to the Republican Party, well, for starters, he's not up till 2020, right? So he's got three more years. A lot of things are going to happen between now and then and when he runs for re-election. But two, whether or not he runs as a Republican or he runs as a Democrat, he's running as the same guy. Now, if you're a down-the-line conservative, maybe you get a little bit nervous about this in that Jim Justice is not a small government fiscal hawk conservative, that this may be seen as one more sign of populism overtaking the Republican Party. Having said that, as you alluded to earlier, the Republican Governors Association can basically kick its feet up on the desk and say, yep, looking pretty good right now. 35 governor's mansions occupied by Republicans across the country, 14 Democrats, one independent up in Alaska who is probably better thought of as a Democrat. Look, they're going to have a lot of mansions to defend in the 2018 midterms and 2020 after that. But look, when your party has 35 of the 50 governor's mansions across the country, you're doing something right. And it's very interesting. Even when the Republicans were having such troubles in the Obama years, they were racking up those victories in the midterms of 2010 and 2014. Governors were leading the way there. So one more state to cross off the to-do list for the RGA, and a sign that Republicans are, you know, at a time that's allegedly this great backlash against Trump, you don't see, as far as I can tell, you know, people might argue how much Murkowski and McCain and Susan Collins still count as Republicans, but you don't see Republicans jumping to join the Democratic Party.
The Democrats have basically told coal workers in West Virginia, we're totally going to kill your jobs, but we're going to replace it with something great. Somehow that didn't resonate.
Go figure.
All right, on to the bad martini now, Jim. And we found out late yesterday afternoon, and of course, if you've watched 5 seconds of cable news since then, everybody's frothing at the mouth over the news that former FBI director and special counsel Bob Mueller has impaneled a grand jury in Washington, D.C. He actually did it several weeks ago. Some people believe that this is simply an easier way to gather information and testimony and to subpoena records from anybody who's reluctant to cooperate. Others believe that this means that we're headed down the road towards severe criminal charges against Trump's inner circle, or at least some in the outer circle. But this is definitely getting more serious than Trump and his defenders would like us to believe. We simply don't know a whole lot more other than the fact that this is going on. We know that a lot of FBI officials are among the witness list at this point, since they were already looking into the allegations of collusion and so forth. What do you make of this, other than the fact that it's probably likely to dominate people in Washington, both politically and journalistically, in the weeks to come?
One of my favorite gifts of all time is this little snippet of, I believe it's three puppets. I think they're supposed to be characters from Harry Potter, all flailing around frantically, you know, in a state of panic. And I always put that up whenever cable news starts going, rah! You know, Wolf Blitzer looks like he needs to breathe into a brown paper bag. The Drudge brings out the sirens. We're constantly being told, stand by. And yes, you know, this is a step that is significant. As my colleague Andy McCarthy pointed out, what makes it significant is that, okay, they've looked at it, and now they think there's a chance they may want to indict somebody over that. They're now going to start building the case for this. We've all probably heard the saying that a prosecutor can indict a hand sandwich. A indictment by in and of itself is not necessarily mean the person did it. Simply means the prosecutors think they have a case they can prove to a jury, separate from a grand jury. The standards for a grand jury are a little bit lower. Why I think this should be the bad martini, and what I find really ominous about it, is not that I think this is all going to lead to some giant smoking gun moment where Robert Mueller exposes how Trump and Putin colluded to, you know, swing the election, and video of them going blah ha 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 or something. It's entirely possible they find something that they see as a potential crime committed by somebody on the periphery of the Trump campaign, or some of these people who are kind of the quasi hangers on or something like that. What I worry about is Trump's reaction. Now, obviously, we've seen some murmuring. We saw his lashing out at Jeff Sessions a couple of days ago. Apparently, Trump thinks that Jeff Sessions' decision to recuse is the cause of all this. No, Mr. President, I think the Comey firing is a bigger factor in all this. Pretty much everybody agrees that Sessions, because he had played a role in the campaign, was going to have to recuse himself from any investigations of the campaign. Look, this is one of those things where there is no point in freaking out about this until we have a better sense of what Mueller is investigating and who is at legal risk right now. Now, my colleague Andy McCarthy points out that at some point it would be a good idea if Mueller came out and said, either yes, the president is under investigation, or no, the president is not under investigation. Kind of a point worth noting there. But my fear is that Trump will see this as an effort to get him and to get his family, that he will seek to have Mueller fired from the position. Sessions has said he can't do it because he's recused. He'd go on to Rosenstein. The president could very well go on a firing tirade, going through the chain of command until he finds somebody who's willing to fire Mueller. The other intriguing bit of detail is that apparently the new chief of staff, Kelly, told Sessions, we like you, don't worry, we want to keep you around. Does Kelly resign if Trump goes on this firing tirade? It's now imaginable that Trump could have some sort of Saturday Night Massacre type mass firing going on. I don't think he's going to do that. I think there are enough people around him who would assure him what an unwise move that would be. But at this point, we don't know whether this is looking at somebody who's on the far periphery of the Trump campaign, or at central figures, or the president's family. And that's a very dark cloud to have hanging over the administration in Washington for the foreseeable future.
Let's hope that this special counsel operation ends a little more nobly than the last major one that's coming to mind for me. Maybe there has been one since the whole Valerie Plame special counsel, Jim. But that one, of course, ended with the special prosecutor haranguing people who had nothing to do with the actual leaking. So let's see if this one can actually get
there. Look, we're talking special counsels, Greg. Ken Starr is the Tom Brady of special counsels. Technically, he didn't get his guy impeached, but you want to talk about, you know, going the distance and going far afield from the original avenue of investigation and things like that. I mean, Ken Starr, you know, and I believe, by the way, Ken Starr said he's warning about this special investigation going far afield of its original mandate. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Ken.
Well, you don't think that real estate ventures in Arkansas have a lot to do with the president's affair with an intern?
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. Now, you know, people might argue, look, any crime committed by the president is worth investigating and is worth resolving and you know, prosecuting. But again, this is what people worried about when the special counsel was named, and we'll see how this shakes out. But it is a really fair question. So if you're special counsel, how do you know when you're done? Right? Shouldn't we at least have some sort of clock for them to operate? We have a, you know what, the 25-second clock in basketball?
24, yeah.
The 24-second clock? Shouldn't we have some sort of time limit? You know, okay, Mr. Okay, special counsel, you've got 1 year to get an indictment, or 18 months or something like that. So, of course, people would say that would just make people want to drag their feet and, you know, be slow to respond and things like that. There's always a possibility of a special counsel getting out of control. And then no one is safe, Greg.
Thank you for the excellent segue, Jim. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Simply Safe Home Security, because a lot of us are getting excited for summer. You and I have already taken some vacations, and we've got some still coming up. And that's what happens during vacation. You take a few days off from home, you spend time with the family, you get that smell in the back of the car, and then you get home and you're all exhausted, and then you have to talk about how fun it was. Or spending long days at the beach, maybe taking kids to an amusement park. You know what gets a burglar excited for summer? Knowing that you're going to do all those things and spend all that time away from home. Summer is prime time for burglary. So now is the time to protect your home. And for a limited time, you can take a whopping $100 off Simply Safe's special summer package.
This is Simply Safe's biggest ever summer sale. It has everything you need to protect your home, an arsenal of security sensors to secure each door and window. Your Simply Safe system comes with a panic button, a blaring extra siren, and a wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch. Your family, your home, and everything in it will stay safe around the clock. With Simply Safe, there are no long-term contracts, no installation costs, and no hidden fees. 24/7 professional monitoring is just $14.99 a month.
Simply Safe is the Kirk Cousins of home security. No long-term contracts. This summer,
very good.
You like that? Yeah. This summer, see what Simply Safe can do for your home. Get $100 off your summer security package at simplysafe.com/ricochet. But you've got to hurry, because this offer ends soon. That's simplysafe.com/ricochet to get your $100 off. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. SimpliSafe.com/ricochet for $100 off your new home security system.
Greg, before we move on, let's just point out that Simply Safe will not, no matter what happens in the coming year, Simply Safe will not leave you and go play for the San Francisco 49ers next year. Just in case anyone was worried about that Kirk Cousins comparison.
Right. They also won't slap a franchise tag on you and make you stay with them any longer than
there
you want.
There you go, exactly.
Yeah, yes. So works both ways. All right, let's move on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And a few days ago, we talked about how the IT specialist that Debbie Wasserman Schultz stuck with all the way to the point he was arrested trying to leave the country last week. And now she's got an even different spin on this story. You talk about it in the Morning Jolt, so I'm going to quote you as well as part of a story that you have in the Jolt. Wow, Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz is basically accusing the FBI of anti-Muslim bias in their arrest of her former IT staffer, Imran Awan. Several members of Awan's family were accused of stealing equipment from members' offices without their knowledge and committing serious, potentially illegal violations on the House IT network. And the FBI arrested him. Now the story. His arrest, the congresswoman said, had nothing to do with the months-long investigation of Awan as an IT worker for a variety of members of Congress. An FBI affidavit filed with the criminal complaint said Awan said his wife claimed a property used to secure a home equity line of credit was a principal residence when, in fact, it was a rental property. Wasserman Schultz said there still hasn't been any evidence presented that he's done anything wrong involving his work for Congress. And she said she believes that he may have been put under scrutiny because of his religious faith. Awan is a Muslim. Quote, I had grave concerns about his due process rights being violated. When their investigation was reviewed with me, I was presented with no evidence of anything that they were being investigated for. And so that, in me, gave me great concern that his due process rights were being violated, that there were racial and ethnic profiling concerns that I had, she said. So, Jim, when you don't have a good legal argument necessarily, this is the card you play.
Yeah, let me put it this way. Listeners will know I was one of those Never Trump guys. I have many disagreements with the president, and probably one of them would be the way Trump behaves when he's accused of something, when he's been caught with his hand in the cookie jar, when he's something has happened. He'll go, not only have I done nothing wrong, but Ted Cruz's dad killed JFK. Right. It is this, you know, like it's this implausible denial coupled with the outrageous counter accusation that everybody can kind of tell is baseless. In the Morning Jolt and in the corner today, I put a link to the affidavit from the indictment against the staffer. Read it for yourself. Everything seems to check out to me. What we do know is that the Capitol Police were investigating this guy, three of his brothers, and these other folks who were all involved for either taking equipment they were not supposed to, misusing equipment they were not supposed to, and accessing things they want. Now, in the version of events we get from Wasserman Schultz, it's that he's using some app he's not supposed to. It sounds like it's such an innocent and trivial disagreement. You really have a hard time believing that the U.S. Capitol Police would spend several months on this. And somebody's lying here. And I just don't think that the U.S. Capitol Police would be really eager to go after somebody. By the way, it's worth noting that, you know, because they were working for several offices at once, you add up the numbers of what they're getting paid. I believe one of the staffers who was 20 years old was making something in the neighborhood of $140,000 a year. People wow. look at this and say there's some really odd things going on with the contracting for these IT staffers. But by itself, this does not necessarily mean that they're involved with this. The indictment was not necessarily over what they did on Capitol Hill. It is about this effort to get a loan. Now, in the description of that affidavit, it really does sound odd that they're saying, what do you want the money for? And they said, well, it's for funeral expenses. And they said, you really can't get the loan for funeral expenses. The person apparently says, hang on, I'll look online for a better reason, and then says it's for a property purchase. And the fine, fine minds at the credit union said, okay, that sounds good. This sounds totally on the up and up. Sure, let's have the money. And then, they wired it to Pakistan. This all emits a very strong odor. I look at this and see there's no problem saying, yes, this is suspicious behavior. This meets the legal standards for investigation. There's nothing in this that says to me, they're just going after this guy because he's Muslim. Now, look. We're going to presumably at some point have a trial, unless the guy decides to plead out or something. The investigation could have other twists and turns. But by and large, it looks like this will all come out on the wash, so to speak. We will know whether this is all driven by some sort of anti-Muslim bias. I'm betting pretty heavily that it is not. And if it is not, Debbie Wasserman Schultz basically accused the U.S. Capitol Police and the FBI. She played the race card, right? She basically said this is targeting this guy because of his religion when he did nothing wrong, when in fact he did do something wrong. You know why people kind of shrug when they hear the, you know, accusations of racism, Debbie Wasserman Schultz? It's because of people like you, right? You get caught in trouble and you decide to create this giant distraction and you abuse the red cardinal sin accusation of racism to get yourself out of trouble. And we should be outraged over this. And I realize there are a whole bunch of Democrats who don't like her. Apparently, she's got a primary challenger. It's going to run against her in 2018. But look, this is really terrible behavior, right? This is the sort of thing that is corrosive and acidic to our public discourse when people get accused of racism for no good reason because people want to distract from their own wrongdoing. I don't like it when Trump does it, but let's point out, he did not invent this, right? All he's doing is mimicking bad behavior that has become increasingly commonplace in politics. And it would be really nice if you could have a broad bipartisan agreement to say, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, there's really no reason to think that this is religiously based. There's no reason to think this investigation is racially based. And you are lying. And you are attempting to distract from your own bad judgment. Because I'm going to make one slight correction to what you said, Greg. Technically, he was not dismissed until the day after.
That's right.
He was arrested by the FBI at the airport. Also in that, the other thing is, okay, so we've all kind of made fun of Debbie Wasserman Schultz for not saying things that are extremely implausible, for not appearing to be the sharpest knife in the drawer. I think my favorite example of this was when I believe it was a foreign news crew asked her at the 2012 Democratic convention what she thought about Obama's kill list. This is the list of foreign terrorists. So he had decided he would take out through a drone strike if the intelligence indicated they were in a particular place. And she scoffed at that, said, oh, he doesn't do stuff like that. I mean, this has been in the front page of the New York Times. You want to talk about someone being spectacularly ill-informed and so ironclad in their conclusion. Oh, the president wouldn't do something like this. It's right there, right? She even told somebody who's literally in psychological denial. But anyway, so we have this person who says this. And who basically, you know, her term at the DNC ended rather ignobly, irritated a lot of Bernie Sanders fans, arguably could be said to ran the DNC into the ground. But I really feel like this is somebody who really should not thrive in national politics. This is someone who really makes implausible excuses, implausible lies, is a bad and corrosive force. And I don't understand why the consequences haven't caught up to her, although considering the state of this investigation, maybe they will.
Yeah, I'm finding it a little tough to believe there's an anti-Muslim bias with the FBI. I'm thinking back to the Omar Mateen story in Orlando when they checked him out twice, let him go, and then Disney called and they said, yeah, we're not really going to look at that. So.
You think the U.S. Capitol Police, which answers to a whole bunch of Democrats, is going to be full of raging anti-Muslim bias, Greg? You think? Yeah. Also, by the way, so she's really upset. So how about all those other like 20 Democratic lawmakers who you know did let him go instead fired him after the investigation by the U.S. Capitol Police began? Are they all terrible racists in the eyes of Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
Maybe. Depends how much trouble she's in.
Yeah, there you go. Depends if she needs to throw them under the bus, too.
On that note, Jim, have a great weekend.
Could be worse, everyone. You could be Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Something to be thankful for heading into the weekend.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our good friends at Simply Safe Home Security and get that $100 off your brand new home security system. SimplySafe.com/ricochet. Tune in on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.